And welcome to the Dawn of X book chat, where we discuss the most important thing in comics, MILFs. I'm Amos.
I'm Juan.
I'm Rodders.
And I'm Fox, and we've all officially gone insane because of quarantine.
So the first book we have this week, we've had a lot of books this week, but the first book we're going to go over is Wolverine. And we go back to the detective story that happened in Wolverine 1. We start off with Wolverine kind of recovering from the psychic attack he had from the Pale Lady, and then waking up and seeing that other people like Bishop have been attacked too. Then we cut to the detective whose name I believe is Jeff. And they find out that there has been another attack by the Pale Lady, and they've lost another thing of pollen, of Krakoan pollen, which was supposed to cure his daughter. So he's like, I'm going to go to like the extreme measure, and I'm going to go call Wolverine. And Wolverine ends up going on a trip with him through the sea so that they can recover this pollen. But it kind of ends up in like the Pale Lady attacking Wolverine, and Wolverine attacking Jeff and killing him. And it ends with this really nice line. I love that you reveal yourself, your true self as an animal. And that's an ending because we have this kind of like juxtaposition of like Wolverine losing his humanity again, which is something that always happens in Wolverine comics, but it's something I like seeing. So
this book had one of the best like Scott Logan scenes, where it's Logan going to apologize for Scott for killing Jean, and it's so full of tension, and I'm just like, your lovers stop fighting. And it's like, your Uncle Logan and he's Scott Summers, you're stop this.
Yeah, I definitely liked that little part of the story. I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get more of the vampire storyline in the second issue like we did in the first. But I get that we have to go through this Blue Lady ghost storyline first before we can go back to the main storyline, which is probably the vampires. I'm more interested in the vampires, honestly.
I do have to say, I kind of like the zombie Kitty Pryde design that they gave her for like Bishop's nightmare. I think that was really cool to kind of like tie in that Bishop probably feels guilt over Kitty dying. And I don't know, I just, the art in this book is really great.
It really is.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful like, artwork.
I don't know, there's not a lot to say about this book since it's essentially like a chapter. But like, there's nothing like too much happening.
Yeah, it's like an in-between book. It's getting to the next issue.
Can I say, I really like the detective and his daughter. Like, I'm not really, especially in this era, I really don't care about humans and X-books right now. Like, I'm just like, I don't really care. But I truly enjoy the daughter and her father's interactions. But also, it makes me very sad because I'm like, she needs her medicine. And I'm like,
I know, now he's dead.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have been stabbed by Logan and been fine. I mean,
his blood is technically probably healing, right? So he could just cut himself and let him drink his blood
to make him vampires.
More I vampire guess stuff.
Ron just wants vampires.
It's all about the blood.
Me personally, I, it was a good story, beautiful story. I'm just, to me, it was like, oh, another Wolverine getting taking control and illusions causing him to kill his friends. One of those.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it felt like to me, especially since we so recently had Old Man Logan going through that exact same thing. I was just like, oh, this seems really fast to do another one of these stories. At least to me personally, I was just like, okay, fine.
I think it's just interesting that like these are the stories that sell. I don't know what it says about the Wolverine fan base that they're interested in these stories, because I feel like once you've done it 100 times, especially with like Logan becoming an enemy to the X-Men again, you know?
Right.
Like, how many times are we going to do this? How many times is Logan going to be the evil guy?
That's why I felt like Cyclops' thing was like, don't even, like, you've done this times and time again. Like, of course you killed her. It just didn't feel like it was unexpected.
True. I'm just waiting for the vampire thing. I think we're getting back to the vampire thing in June, honestly speaking. Because I remember, maybe May, because May has him fighting, what's it called? Omega Red, and that's where the Omega Red storyline goes back into. So, yeah, I'm guessing that's when we're going to see more of the vampire storyline.
I'm all for that.
With this story, I'm the one thing that intrigues me more than anything is the Pale Lady. That's the one that I want to find more information about. I want to see, like, is she a mutant? Is he tripping balls? What's going on? Like, what is that whole thing?
I'm going to say a bold statement. I think the Pale Lady should have been an enemy on a team book rather than a solo book.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like if we moved her to maybe Marauders, I feel like she would be a great villain there, because that would create, like, that illusion of distrust between these members who already don't trust each other that much.
Right.
And she'd be a better villain there.
What was that, Fox?
Actually, that's not a bad idea. Part of me, now that almost mentions that, I feel like this Pale Lady arc might have been an X-Force arc that that Percy really wanted to do, but I guess he couldn't fit it in into, like, X-Force, so he kind of just sidestepped it into a Wolverine solo.
Right.
Because it's like, the other members of X-Force are very heavily involved in this team. Plus, we have Trotters. So, like, I feel like this Pale Lady arc might have been a Wolverine arc that just... this might have been an X-Force arc that just kind of, like, morphed into the first arc of Wolverine.
Yeah, so, I can get behind that.
But, I mean, we can already tell the, X-Force and Wolverine are going to be very intertwined books, because, you know, in May, both X-Force and Wolverine are fighting Omega Red in some way.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I just hope the Pale Lady comes back. She's an interesting villain. I like her.
Yeah. And I kind of like the idea of X-Men right now, X-Men fighting villains that aren't exactly anti-mutant, but also just, like, but are just kind of there because, like, they're getting in the way of, like, either, like, their economic stance or political stance, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for example, Doom in F4 X-Men. Anybody else got anything to say about this comic?
Well, I think we're good on Wolverine. Mm-hmm. And then, speaking of bloodthirsty, you know, beings that didn't appear in Wolverine, we're going to talk about the Brood.
Yay.
And X-Men number 9. X-Men number 9 actually continues the story that happened in X-Men number 8, which is the Brood coming to Earth, trying to get the King Egg back. And we open up 8,000 years ago, which actually we learn how the Brood come to our universe. The Kree bring the Brood to our universe. I don't think that's ever been said before. I think this is a little bit of an introduction on how the Brood are coming, and I really like that. It was really interesting. And then 8,000 years later, we're coming back to the X-Men, running away from the Brood, trying to get the King Egg far away from the Earth. And they run into the Shi'ar, their good old friends, and the Starjammers that are keeping them captive. And the Starjammers aren't keeping them. I mean, the Shi'ar aren't keeping them captive. The Kree are keeping them captive. And then they run into them, and actually the Brood whale, the big whale that they're in, actually eats the executioner, or the, not executioner, what is it called?
The accuser?
The accuser, that's what you call it. Eat the accuser, and they're crash landing because the Brood are right on top of them. Like, they can't outrun them. There's too many. and they crash on a planet with the Shi'ar, and it's this all-out, like, death battle they're having. I mean, it goes, the arc, like, turns, like, darker. They're in, like, shadows. It's really, like, scary movie-esque, and everything seems lost. Like, Jean is screaming for Scott, and then it just takes a turn, and we would say, where's the king egg? And Rue is eating it. And now, my favorite moment of this whole comic happened. Brew is now king of the brood, which was a shocking revelation, and I did not expect for them to go this way. And I kind of love it. And that was X-Men number 9.
I really like how this kind of set up, like, possible stories and for Empire, as Empire is going to be the next issue of X-Men is going to be tying into Empire, because, like, they mentioned the Kuati in, it sounded like it was more Kuati in, as pronounced, yeah, in that, but it really did well in setting up, like, a more alien storyline to come next issue, as page was literally just Empire, and
especially with the Supreme Intelligence in that, you know, that's so huge in the Kree Empire.
Yeah, and I really like that introduction of the Black Accuser, like, you know, the Dark Accuser, whatever it was called, but mm-hmm. I really like this design, and I really like how they kind of just, like, straight up murdered him.
Right? Yeah. Which makes sense because, you know, if Captain Marvel, which they've already teased, is going to be the new Accuser, I guess this is how we found out that the Accuser is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. The last Accuser, because there's been a couple. But now I guess they're all
dead. Well, he's the latest one, so yeah, that's it. There's no Accuser currently.
I really dug this issue, and I really dig how the X-Men are, like, stacking up powers. Mm-hmm. They basically have an in to be in control of the Shi'ar Empire, because, you know, Xandra, and you know that's gonna come back, and, like, we're gonna have Xavier meet Xandra, and, like, basically
I can't wait for that.
Basically, the X-Men control the Shi'ar Empire. They now technically control the Brood, because, you know, Brew ate the king egg and is now in control. Well, for at least 10 years.
Yeah. Brew is king. But they said he's king until another replica of the king egg is brought into fruition, which I think Hickman put that in there for a reason. I bet the Kree are going to try to create another king egg.
Yeah.
Because they want the brood. They spent 8,000 years trying to amp them up. They're not just going to give them up.
Yeah. And then, I mean, through Gorgon, they X-Men also sort of own parts of Hydra. So the X-Men kind of have, like, if there wanted to be a war, the X-Men would kind of win. Like, there's no, they have the numbers, they have the powers, they have the, like, they have this, you know.
I wouldn't say they have the numbers. Just, like, I don't know. Like, I'm just thinking of it from, like, military perspectives, because I was really into history for a while. And just, like, there's, like, what, 40,000 people on Krakoa?
Well, no. They're reviving more and more people every day.
I guess, so. But it's, I don't know. I just don't think Krakoans, at the very least, would want a war. I know,
I don't think they want a war. I just think if it came to that, because, like, they have, like, the generals and, like, the higher up people in X-Men, and then they have, like, mindless foot soldiers in the Brood.
Oh yeah, I guess, but it's, I just have nothing to say about this issue about X-Men, because I don't really like space stuff. Once they go to space, I'm like, I'm checked out.
Well, the one thing I really did like about this issue, more or less about the space, is a few pages we get of them just fighting the Brew, and it just looking like all is lost. Like, it really looks like I said before, a very scary movie is, like, the Brood or
the Swarm.
The Swarm is coming. It's very, like, a kind of like a zombie movie where the heroes are in the climax of the movie and are all surrounded and you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? They're all going to die. No. And then it's like, nope, the day is saved.
Groot ate an egg. He finally ate.
Yeah, he finally ate. He's off his diet.
Yeah. what I really dug about this story was them bringing in the whole Kree thing with them trying to use the Brood as a form of a military strike team, which is really cool. I like that idea. Whoever controls the egg controls the queen kind of thing. I also really, really love Kid Gladiator in this, where he's like, Dad, you promised me that this was going to be like our like getaway trip. But you know how you can make it up for me? F them up. So he has to go and beat up the Shi'ar. Well, not the Shi'ar. Who was he fighting? The Accuser.
The Accuser.
I'm like, oh man, that was so sweet. Seeing Gladiator versus the Accuser.
I know. I hope we get more Kid Gladiator in the X-Books and Krakoa in general. Maybe he'll come back. I know he wants to be with his dad. But hopefully this relationship doesn't just end after Empire. And we get to see both of them, especially Kid Gladiator. Because he's kind of awesome.
Yeah, like I said, it's like one thing Hickman has done is brought back like family dynamics. That's really cool.
Yeah, so next issue is Empire, which is cool. Which I am not reading any. Like I said, I'm only possibly going to be reading the main series, the X-Men tie-ins, and the Hulkling one-shot. And nothing else.
Oh, we're reading it all.
Yeah, we're reading it all. We'll keep you updated.
Thank you. I'm also going to be reading the Strike Force tie-in, only because that will probably deal with Hulkling Wiccan issues. But this is not an Empire podcast. We are an X-Men podcast. So I am going to go, unless anybody has anything else to say, I'm going to go on to F4 X-Men. Yeah, if that's
nope, okay. Go ahead. Oops. Sounds good.
Okay, cool. F4 X-Men was, I liked the series a lot more at first, but this issue I'm kind of losing interest in the series. Basically,
well, good thing there's only one more issue.
Yeah, thank you. I hope the next crossover mini they do is better. We find out that we know that the X-Men were on Krakoa. The issue starts off with the Fantastic Four and the X-Men both flying towards Krakoa. X-Men shoot down Fantastic Four in this great scene with Cyclops, and it was so good. And they, you know, they start fighting. Kitty Pryde breaks it up because you're like, yo, I made a deal with Doom. Everybody gets mad at Kitty. Magneto's like, you can't do that. You don't speak for us. And Sue Storm's like, you also don't speak for my child. And it's a big mess. And so we get arguments between Doom, you know, and then eventually they agree to just look over the process that Doom is going to use to bring back Franklin's powers. And then, like, so there's, you know, there's that whole argument going on in the lab, like, them, like, spat between smart people. And while that happens, Sue agrees to take the mutants to go find the mutants that are being trapped on Latveria. And we learned that the Latverian mutants had tried to escape to come to Krakoa, but they had found them, imprisoned some who agreed to bow the knee, and murdered the ones that did not, and so they left, and so they didn't leave. So all of a sudden, what they think is a Doombot bursts through the window, attacks them. Wolverine like starts fighting him. The Doombot flies into the air with him, and Wolverine stabs him. Well, it turns out it was not a Doombot. It was what looked like a Latverian mutant inside a Doombot armor. And obviously, very, very obviously, Doom kind of planned this, and he launches his Doom Sentinels to attack the X-Men, and that's how that ends. And Doom is a very bad person.
Yeah, this was definitely not like one of his finer moments.
No.
He was very arrogant and very much like he put the fear of X-Men into the mutants from Latveria. Like, they were deathly afraid that the X-Men were going to come and kill them or something. Like, it was just bad.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Doom did kill some. It's hinted at that Doom did kill, like, past mutants that tried to run away. So maybe he blamed that on the X-Men and was like, hey, you can't leave or they're, like, going to get you, you know? Because he wants to... For Doom, losing any of his citizens, especially to another country, that's a loss for Doom. Like, that's the ultimate betrayal. Because he's, like... In his mind, I feel like he's giving everything to his citizens. Like, even though he makes them worship him and everything. He's like, well, I'm giving my magic, my lifeblood into this country, into you. And then you just go and betray me? Like, no, you can't do that. You have to stay here forever. So... It's like, I feel like Chip Zdarsky wrote Doom very on point with this issue, which was kind of great. But actually, I have to say that this issue was actually my favorite out of the three so far. Yeah, I mean, I guess my theory is wrong that Franklin is manipulating them, which kind of sucks because I feel like sometimes in the last two issues, the characters are not, were over-exaggerized, you know, like Sue Storm and all that. Because I don't feel like she's ever been that hateful or passive-aggressive against mutants. Reed has, but I don't know. Maybe it's just because of her children. But I like this issue just because it was more of a dynamic with all the characters. It wasn't just Reed or Sue. It was everybody. And I like, we had more moments with each X-Men, which I like too.
This issue kind of turned me off, to be honest. I read it and I was like, I guess you could call that the story. It was very like lacking in many ways. It was lacking of the dramatic tension because you knew what was going to happen. And it was sort of like ham-fisted. It was like this ham-fisted, we have to make the X-Men and the Fantastic Four work together again after they've been kicking each other's asses for the past two issues. How are we going to do that? You know, it felt very like that, and it was very hard to read.
I mean, I definitely can understand that point. But I feel like we knew Doom was going to bring the Fantastic Four and X-Men together since Chip Zdarsky introduced him into the first issue. I was like, yeah, towards the end, they're going to come together to beat Doom, and then they're going to be like, oh, I guess everything is fine. Franklin can have a Krakoan gate in the Fantastic Four building. I'm sure it's going to be the end result, honestly.
What I think Doom is trying to do here, I think Doom is trying to turn Franklin against both the X-Men and the Fantastic Four.
I can see that.
Because, look, he did the whole, like, he's like, I'm doing what your father can't. I'm doing, you know, he lied, yada, yada. And then, but he's also, you know, I'm almost positive he manipulated the whole situation of Wolverine killing that Latverian mutant. And it seems like he manipulated this whole situation because he wants Franklin for himself. Because if you look at the final cover, you see it's Doom with Franklin in front of him. And it looks very much like he's like, ah, kid, I'm your boss now. Like, he could want Franklin to hurt Franklin's powers to be able to protect the people.
But yeah, it's very on brand for Doom. I mean, he took over. I mean, he turned what's Charles' name? Valeria.
Valeria.
Yeah, he took Valeria over before. I mean, he convinced her to betray her family and go to his country for like. A while, actually. Like, she left home for a while. That was at least a couple of years. So, I'm sure he's going to try to do the same, because Franklin's a very powerful ally. And I'm sure Doom was kind of jealous of Krakoa, too, because Krakoa is making big influences on the world, and Doom wants that for his own country. So how can he do that? Have the most powerful mutant.
Exactly.
This issue was all right. that's the way I was. I was like, eh, okay.
It's not the best issue out this week. I think it's the best issue out of the three that we have had for Fantastic Four, but it's low on what we've had come out this week for me.
Yeah, I read it and I was like, oh, we didn't see that coming. Oh, look, Doom Sentinels. Hmm. Okay.
Well, we knew that was coming from last issue.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, he used the one, their biggest enemy against them. Oh, and he made them Doom versions of it because Doom loves Doom.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of played out on like how the Wolverine story is kind of played out. Like, about him killing the X-Men. That's the same kind of played out thing. Like, oh, there's Sentinels even. No, I haven't seen that before. So, but I mean, hey, it's Doom. He's sometimes predictable.
I feel like all these, the Hickman stuff is like rehashed, updated versions of old forms of attacking the mutants. Like, oh, remember this old thing that used to happen? Now we just adapted it now again. Now it's a new kind of threat. And that's what this felt like.
Either or, this is. I'm just happy the series is ending. I'm. I'm sorry. I'm tired of the stress. I'm tired of this.
I just want to see what happens.
Like, I want to see.
I want to see what it ends.
I want to see. I had like higher hopes for Zdarsky.
Yeah.
At least in the sense of, like, humor, there wasn't a lot of really good... He's, like, known for having, like, a little, like a funnier tone. And it felt like he took such a serious tone from the first issue that, like, every... Like, there wasn't really any moment where I could, like, be like, oh, this is, like, fun. You know? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, Chip Zdarsky is really, in his other works, is really good at having character, deep character interactions, like the dialogue. And that's what I was hoping for Fantastic Four and X-Men. I was hoping for more deep dialogue conversations. I mean, he tried to do that with Doom and Xavier, but I was hoping with all the characters coming together. Because Fantastic Four have always had really big, great ideas. Well, not all great, but big ideas. And the X-Men, too. So I was hoping, since, you know, they're coming together for this whole Krakoan era, I was hoping for a bigger discussion between all of them. But we haven't really gotten that. Maybe the last issue will get it. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Next story.
Next story is Giant Size.
Oh, it's me. This week, we had Giant Size X-Men, which was Nightcrawler, aka Alan Davis, just drawing Excalibur again. We go back to Westchester. Back to the old abandoned X-Mansion. They've noticed that there's been some pings at a Krakoan gate there of, like, an energy that reads mutant, but it doesn't come through. So they're trying to see what's happening there, like, what's going on. Is it a human? Is it another one of the X-Factor things where someone took someone's flesh and is trying to walk through the gate? So they're trying to figure out what it is. So they go back to the X-Mansion. It's a team of Nightcrawler, Doug, Eyeboy, Magic, and Lockheed. So they're like the new little mini Excalibur team. So they're going there to see what's up. And instantly, like, they notice, like, there's, like, this vibe there. Like, there's an energy, and Lockheed automatically, like, attaches to it. He's like, I know what's up. I know this. And he just starts burning things down. Because he's smart. He remembers scent or something, and he knows, oh, I need to start burning quick. And while that's happening, Nightcrawler starts seeing images of past X members. He sees it's Thunderbird at first, and then he's like, did anyone else see that? Like, am I going crazy? Or, like, did anyone see that? And then all of a sudden, he sees somebody else, and then Eyeboy's trying to, like, use his vision, his, like, thermal sight, all of his different forms of sight to see if there's something there. And he's like, there's nothing here. It's just us. But then they start realizing that, like, wait, no, there is something here. So Nightcrawler starts bamfing around, and then he sees Rachel, but Rachel back in her old spiky red uniform That's her Hellhound uniform. So he's trying to like track her down. Like she's not talking to him at all. She's just running. And she runs into this tunnel that kind of looks like a living organ or something. And it's down into the basement. So he's trying to stop her and he bamps right in front of her and he's talking to her. He's like, what's going on? What's happening? And she's like, help us, but like in alien talk. So Doug, being Doug, decides to touch the wall to see what's going on because he's getting a reading off the walls. And then he gets sucked into the wall. And then while they're getting distracted by that, Rachel runs away. And then we go to see what Doug's doing. And Doug finds this big, like, orb. And he reads that it's, like, kind of like tech. So he uses Warlock to try to see what the alien technology is. And then, of course, he finds out that it's a Seedry. The Seedry are, like, bio-organic technology, like, something like that. So, he's like, oh, snap, I know what this is. So we go back to Nightcrawler and trying to fight Rachel, only to find out that Rachel falls apart and turns into a bunch of these little Seedries. And they're like, oh, my God, what the hell? So they have to start fighting off the Seedry. And then we go back to Doug, who's finding out more about what's happening. And he finds out that they've been stuck here on Earth, that they made a nest here in the bottom of the X-Mansion. They've been here for years, apparently. So they're trying to, like, basically just live. And in the meantime, Nightcrawler, Magic, and Eyeboy don't know any of this because Doug's separated from them. So they're fighting off this oncoming attack from them. Another swarm attack. And then Magic just kind of like limbos out to try to figure out where Doug is. Then she finds Doug, but she also finds Warlock. And she sees that Warlock is around now. She's like, oh, what the hell is this? And we see Warlock in all of his little goofy glory attached to a Seedry. And Doug's like, listen to me. I can explain all this. Like, I'm going to tell you what's happening, but, like, not now. There's other things we have to deal with. So they go back to the rest of the group, and Doug explains everything to the rest of the group and tells them basically that the CG have a nest and they're here protecting something. And they find out the thing that they're protecting is Lady Mastermind. She has been cocooned in there, trapped for God knows how long. I don't even remember the last time I saw Lady Mastermind. So they free her. They make an agreement with the Seedry that they're going to let them nest there and live happily ever after. But, yeah, that's basically all this book was about. It was just about the Seedry. It's like Alan Davis doing a tribute to old X-Men stories.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey.
So, yeah. That was the end.
I expected more out of the story. I know I keep saying this a lot. But, again, this is one of those stories I was more hyped for the Giant Size X-Men because I love Nightcrawler. I'm always in for a good... He always has, like, these very heartwarming stories. Mm-hmm. Very, like, give me, like, the fuzzies on the inside. And this story felt more like a Doug story.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about it, I remembered that Simonson gave an interview once that, like, people used to hate Doug until he died.
Right.
Because he wasn't very threatening. So I'm wondering if that was the reason why it was, like, called, like, the Nightcrawler one-shot versus the Doug Ramsey one-shot, which I feel would have fitted more. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I read an interview recently which was about this issue, and it was basically Jonathan Hickman saying, tell me it's Nightcrawler, and not make it anything really about him. Like, I guess it's from his past, you know, because he's fought the Seedry and Excalibur and Uncanny X-Men in the past, but this wasn't what I wanted.
No, and I mean, honestly, they already had Magic there, who was a teleporter. So why was Nightcrawler even there? He did nothing significant.
No.
He didn't even, he wasn't even the one that discovered that Duglock was still around, you know? Warlock. So, like, Warlock was still around. Like, it would have made more sense if they would have switched Magic and Nightcrawler's position and made Nightcrawler the one that discovered that and make Nightcrawler have the secret, because it was a giant size issue about Nightcrawler. So it would be about him discovering something major about, you know, Krakoan's secret or something that could change Krakoa forever. But it didn't.
Well, I kind of get, part of me is like, okay, I get why Magic was the one that saw it, because the last time Magic saw Warlock was in Dead Souls when Warlock took over all of the New Mutants. So I was like, oh, she's like, oh crap, is this crazy Warlock again? What does he want? You know, I kind of get that, why it was Magic, but at the same time, I was like, this is a Nightcrawler issue. Why is nothing happening really with Nightcrawler?
Mm-hmm. All they did was show him act a little crazy about seeing, you know, quote unquote ghosts that didn't actually be ghosts. So yeah. That's it.
Like, you saw his past friends, you know, Thunderbird, who started with him, and Uncanny X-Men, you know, and then you see him see Rachel, who he's had, you know, a romantic relationship with. So I guess it's like a ghost of Nightcrawler's past, basically, but not really.
And I mean, I did like this issue. If we didn't make it a Nightcrawler giant size, and if it was just like another like one-shot X-Men storyline, then I'd be like, oh, this issue was kind of cool. I liked it because I liked it a lot. And I know that Hickman wanted to make these giant sizes annuals instead. But for the record keeping or whatever, Marvel was like, no, you can't make annuals this time around. So he just made them giant size. So I guess he didn't really have a choice, but I don't know. He could have just...
Well, the thing is, he's letting the artists take lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this basically should have been X-Mansion.
I think that's a problem here, is that every single issue has a different artist and every artist wants to tell a different story. And if he's giving that much freedom, it might cause like some of the tones to be off. And like, I guess this is like a different type of storytelling, but it's an interesting way to tell a story, but it also feels like an incohesive way to tell a story. I feel like he could have named it anything other than like the giant sized one shots.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have still been fine.
Yeah. It could have been like an X-Men Presents story or something. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know. I feel the last one was beautiful as well, and it had a good story. But the plot's it's just dropping little seeds. It doesn't really move stuff forward.
I remember they had discussed that all the giant sizes were gonna like kind of have some sort of beginning, like be all connected in some way. I don't really see how this was connected to the last issue.
But, no.
I mean, we can find out. I mean, I'm excited for Magneto next issue. That should be fun.
Yeah, I feel like Magneto has a lot to do, a lot of work to do, because if I'm not going to get a solid story out of this, I'm like, what, why?
Yeah. The only way I could see how Giant Size connects to Jean and Emma is because I found Lady Mastermind. But I'm like, what can Lady Mastermind do that Emma and Jean can't do for Storm, you know? Like, because she's a telepath, right?
No, she makes illusions.
Oh, but is she kind of telepathic?
Not really.
Not really, no. Well, then, yeah, I don't know. I was trying to connect it.
You're grasping.
Christian Frost does the same thing. So do you really need Lady Mastermind if you have Christian Frost?
No.
Exactly.
You know, like, we don't need all the telepaths. We don't need everyone.
Right.
We don't need everyone front and center.
And then, it's another villain. It's another anti-hero kind of villain headed to Krakoa. So I guess that's something.
Yeah, giant sizes, I feel like, is going to probably be a very mixed bag of stories.
Yeah. Like, I love the reveal of Warlock. That was good. Like, that's going to come back to do something, so that should be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we still got Magneto and Phantom X, and then, of course, Storm 1, which is, like, going to be the culmination of everything. I'm so excited for the Phantom X thing, only because I really want them to bring up the fact that Xavier used to be Phantom X. Like, what happened
exactly?
Like, there's so much there. It's such a...
Like, Phantom X gave up himself for Professor Xavier. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll touch on it. I mean, they kind of have to. I don't know how they can't.
I mean, this is Hickman. He can basically do whatever he wants.
Right.
I mean, true. Look at Giant Size Nightcrawler.
Well, I think it's interesting because the Seedry, like, their home planet was Shi'ar. So they're part of the Shi'ar Empire. So I guess that kind of ties into what's happening in the grand scheme of things. Like, that, here's another alien
ally
creature that's part of the Shi'ar story that's now here on Earth. Mm-hmm. And they got a nest at the old X mansion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, technically, since he gave him the house, can they call him an ally? Maybe they can call him if they need something?
Maybe.
Okay. I think that's really all we have to talk about. Giant Size. Do we want to go on to the big meaty issue of the week, Hellions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Woo! So great being right on Hellions. I'm so glad I was right. I'm so glad.
I was like, after reading it, I was like, Almas has been vindicated.
So, a lot happened in this issue in terms of getting the team together. We have the scene in San Francisco where Alex almost kills a guy and then he gets dragged into trial. We then go on to I'll keep the Quiet Council stuff to last because it's not really that important. But and then we get Manuel getting in trouble because he's been making everyone fight each other. Then we get Orphan Maker and Nanny causing trouble because Orphan Maker doesn't want to be separated from Nanny. And she calms him down, and like you get a scene between Beast and Hank, and they're like, "This is just really weird. I don't know what's going on." And then we get Cecilia Reyes and Sage trying to calm down Wild Child, and it's a scene where they're like, "Oh, he's been calm because we've been giving him pills," but then it turns out that like he hasn't been taking the pills. And then you got John Graycrow attacking Marauders again and pissing everyone off. And then they're all sent to, like, the Silent Council, and the Silent Council deciding what to do with them. And a lot of them are like, maybe we should just send them to the pit like we did with Sabretooth. But then Sinister gets into his, like, very over-the-top, very dramatic speech that almost gets him killed by Apocalypse. And he's like, well, we could use them as, like, a hit team. So the hit team is being led by Kiwanin, and that's revealed in, like, the next scene. And everyone's not sure what Kiwanin has done to deserve being on this team. But then you get to see the team interact for the first time, which involves Wild Child hurting Pharaoh, hurting John Graycrow, and then it essentially ends with the orphanage that Sinister had, and Maddie is back in business. And this was just like I'm not doing it justice summarizing it, but it's just like a lot goes on. I'm just giving you like the completely brief run through, but it's such a good issue.
I'm going to apologize to Almas. I had zero interest in this series.
Oh.
I didn't care. I was like, oh, it's Suicide Squad for X-Men. I don't care. I barely care about Suicide Squad for DC. But this was a fantastic issue. You had a Cyclops basically looking like he was going to fight every single one of the Quiet Council for Havoc. You had great dialogue between the Quiet Council. You had Sinister being so dramatic. He's like, his conversation with what's his name? Not the guy, the French guy who used to be like a crusader. Why am I blinking on his name?
Scalpunter?
Well, no, the guy on the Quiet Council. The other guy with the big shoulder.
Exodus.
Exodus, yes. The conversation he had with Exodus where he's like, oh. He's like, do your shoulder pieces look bigger? I'm just letting you know, I will beat on your ass every moment of the way. No one's shoulder armor will be better than Sinister. And I'm like, and Apocalypse be... And then what's her name? Mystique being like, oh my god, kill me. And everybody just being so done with Sinister is so fantastic. And then you have just like, and I love Apocalypse just like, please get to the point before I murder you. Like, it's not
just because we made the laws doesn't mean we're not above them.
Yeah,
right. He's like, I have no time. I will say, okay, the art is phenomenal. I know Amos, you didn't like the way they drew Warren, but everybody else looks great in this book. I just like the intro scenes to each one of these characters is really cool. And it's like they all had like their moment to shine of like, meanwhile, this is what this character was doing. Like, the nanny part with Orphan Mika was really cool. Like, I really liked the way they introduced him. Like, trying to separate their codependency. And, like, that's not going to happen. And trying to, like, calm the wild child. That's not going to happen. And, like, Scalp Hunter trying to get rid of his past because he's minding his own business. And here comes the Marauders to, like, take him on. Like, all these people...
The Warlocks, you mean?
Yeah, Warlocks, sorry. I'm like, all these people have issues that they can't fix unless they go in there, like, unless they kill them and do, you know, the protocols for whatever they've been doing and messing with people's brains. Like, they can't fix these people. And even then, I feel like they would still revert back to crazy. Like, I love that whole... info sheet with the empath problem. That was such a good like sheet right there with so much to say about like there's some people's natures that you just can't deny that they've been broken and the mutant gene just amped it up.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. This issue was my favorite issue out of all the comics I read, not just X-Men, but more on that point about the broken mutants. I mean, Sinister says that in the Quiet Council, and like he gets everyone to realize that, hey, we shouldn't just dispose of them. Like, remember, Krakoa is for everyone, and we need to give them a chance. He's like, everyone has an excuse here except for Havoc, and even though Havoc kind of does have an excuse because Sinister did a lot of crap to him, but he's like, whatever. But I mean, like, everyone has had trauma that they has messed them up forever. So he's like, let's not just throw them away. Let's be a community with everyone if we said we're going to do that. And that's why I like that he started this with them. I mean, he has an ulterior motive. I don't think he really cares about them, but the fact that they're still not just being thrown in a pit and are actually still living is nice. Like, I'm glad he did it, even if he's doing it for a sinister reason.
Well, see, like, the only complaint I had about this issue was Warren was ugly. And I think, like, considering I've dragged every other book that came out this week, that's, like, high praises from me. Like, the highest praise you can get from me. It's not that I don't enjoy the X-Books. I really do enjoy them. I just also have, like, a high bar priorities for storytelling. I do have to say, I do like to see, like, the dialogue between, like, Nanny and Sinister.
That was so funny.
Where she just scares him. And he compliments her lips.
Yes!
I like the fact that everyone's, like, acknowledging the lips. they're like, this is kind of weird, but like, don't know what to do about it because it's like her body, her choice.
Right,
right.
I like the dialogue between Psylocke and Sinister. Like, I like how Psylocke is just like, no bullshit, I'm gonna do it. I'm like, I just need to do this to Cyclops ask me for a favor. And, you know, she still owes Sinister a favor. So she's just like, if I have to kill somebody, I gotta kill somebody. Even if I gotta kill you, Havoc. Because I remember Havoc being like, why are you here? And she's like, just staring him down. I mean, she's like, don't talk to me before I have to kill you. Like, I'm here just because, you know. And I love that. I love that we're gonna get more of this attitude, I'm gonna kick your butt, stop talking to me kind of Psylocke.
And something, well, Quinnon.
Well, I mean, her code name is Psylocke.
Well, the fact that she's the leader, I'm surprised that it's her that's the leader. I didn't think if she was going to be the main leader.
I mean, it's like Sinister is technically the leader, but she's leader in combat.
I'm still
on, like, this is basically Suicide Squad for X-Men. Like, Quinnon is basically Katana, and I was going to say Havoc is Rick Flag, but that doesn't technically work anymore. Havoc's kind of like Deadshot right now. It's weird, but like...
Yeah, Havoc is Deadshot.
He's one of the more moral... One of the people who has the few morals. And I like a theory I saw online about... what's his name? About Scalp Hunter. Scalp Hunter is the reason he... Because like it was very obvious from his flashback that the Morlocks attacked him. But, like, the way it's worded by the Quiet Council is he attacked the Morlocks. And so it's interesting. Someone had a theory is, as a sort of part of penance, is for what he'd done in the past, that could he be letting the Morlocks take out their aggression on him? Like, he's defending himself, but he's going to, like, let them attack him only as, like, a sort of, like, therapy for them. Because, like, and he covered for it, and he's like,
right.
And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting theory. Like, could, because he's a very bad man. Scalp Hunter is a bad person, and it's interesting. Could he maybe be going down the path of redemption? Who knows? I don't. But this was definitely a very interesting book, and I'm very interested to see where it goes in the future, And honestly speaking, this feels like a very natural progression from Fallen Angels, since this is basically like part two of that.
Right. I
think what I like most about this book is that these people know they're assholes, and they're not changing the fact that they're assholes, you know? Yeah. Like, I guess other than like Wild Child, maybe. I don't know too much about Wild Child, so I apologize. But, like, the rest are kind of, like, confident in the fact that they're assholes. And Orphan Maker isn't considered, like, an asshole, but, like, his caretaker is.
Right. Yeah, no, all these characters are, like, definitely assholes or have the potential to be assholes or have, like, just bad... history from the past, and it's interesting to see how Sinister is manipulating all this and actually sending them to like the orphanage is like the first thing that they have to do. I'm like, damn, okay, you know, don't softball them or anything. Mm-hmm. Throwing them straight to the dogs instantly, especially the way they revealed at the end. Man, that was so cryptic. So crazy. Like, it was just, from beginning to end, this book, I was like, okay, Zeb Wells, I understand when you came out of retirement for this.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. I can't wait till we see more of
Madeline
Pryor. I've tried to read more of her, like, backstory, and she's done so wrong, and then last time we saw her was in X-Men Blue, I believe, mm-hmm. and she was trying to take over the past beast and like made him like a crazy magic beast thing. And that was really cool. So I'm like, I want to see her. She's manipulating people again, doing more experiments, I guess, or torture. I don't know, but we'll see. But one little, a very small piece of this whole issue, which made me smile, is basically Jean, especially Storm, just telling Cyclops to shut up. just because he's like defending his brother, and I get it, it's his brother, but I mean, Havoc's kind of, you know,
I think
the worst. Yeah, right. He's the worst. Honestly, I'm not a big fan of Havoc. But like the power set is cool though. But he's just like, this is my brother. We can't do this to him. And they're just like, this is the Quiet Council's business. This is not for you. You need to shut up and sit down. Thank you. And I just had a biggest smile on my face. I loved it.
And I kind of like how even Havoc was like, yeah, man, you kind of got to chill here. Let's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, Havoc is very self-aware. I'll give him that. He's very self-aware in how, like, destructive and crappy he can be. He tries, but he knows that whenever
he's still broken.
He knows he's broken. He's very self-aware.
I do love the team that they started off with. I was like, Siren, Rockslide, Nightcrawler, Havoc, and Wolverine on a team. I was like, okay.
That was really cool.
But then again, I was also, oh, look, another team Wolverine's on.
Right? He's everywhere.
Hi, Mom. This book is cool. I'm interested to see where it goes. Does anybody have anything else they want to say about this book?
Yes. One last thing before we move forward.
Is it about Nanny?
I think, yes. Of course it's about Nanny. I think I'm very glad she's putting herself out there. I'm very glad she's confident in herself. And it's confirmed that she's feeling herself. And I hope she gets into a relationship soon. And I hope Orphan Maker gets a dad. And they stop making orphans.
Oh my god. But Sinister is going to be the dad.
Oh, god, right. No. That'd be very ironic because he's a person. Like, Orphan Maker started off as one of Sinister's projects. Like, because he was a mutant that he captured and it was like going to kill him. And then the Nanny took him to save him. And that's how it all started. So if it went full circle and they got to, I mean, I'm sure they're not going to do that. But if it did do that, that'd be very ironic. It was like it was destined to be.
And I think we're done with Hellions.
Yeah. Okay, so this is part of the show where I would normally talk about previews and news. But with everything being absolutely horrible right now, there is no news or previews as Diamond Industries or Diamond Distributors has basically shut down all distribution, which has basically thrown every single comic company into turmoil, where they're all basically trying to quickly pick up the pieces and figure out what they're going to do. Some have decided not to print anything or not to release any new books in the interim. Some have just gone ahead with schedule, and some, being DC right now, have said that they're going to continue releasing books digitally. And Marvel, being annoying right now, has not said a word. They have not made any statement on whether or not they're going to be releasing all books digitally or just releasing not books at all. And I would greatly appreciate it if they did. It's Monday. Guys, come on. You have Wednesday is 2 days.
This is like my theory for it. I think the Mouse is making his own shipment company. He's going to have a monopoly on Marvel because he's going to be shipping everything. That's what's going to happen.
Not that.
No. Oh, my God.
I just...
Knock on wood.
No.
Right. Well, Diamond already has a monopoly on all distributing, so I feel like something has to come from this. Like, but take this with a grain of salt. Bleeding Cool did say that Comixology is releasing this week's stuff digitally. But I don't know if that's just for this week or what's going to go through, because DC said we're doing digital. Digital is different from print, so we're going digital. Who knows what Marvel's going to do? Everyone else has announced something except for Marvel. And I'm like, you're one of the big two. Come on.
I'm really hoping that I'm really hoping that Marvel can make a statement soon, that and they'll figure out something. I Okay, I love my LCS. My LCS is fantastic. It's constantly done right by me. But when it comes down to it, I will support creators over LCS. And if that means releasing comics digitally, then that's what's going to have to happen. Because most comic book shops who have thrived right now have diversified what they release, as in they don't just do comics. They do like cards and action figures and statues and toys and
tabletops.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I think they just, if they will, things will figure out. I'm hoping this kills Diamond's control over the distribution industry. And yeah, so does anybody want to explain what our idea for what future is, or if Marvel doesn't release New Dawn of X comics?
Oh yeah, I can. I mean, we're gonna go through paths. We're gonna come together outside of the podcast and vote on which past X-Men stories we want to talk about. Either that be like the past new X-Men one for Grant Morrison, or Astonishing X-Men, or maybe an X-Men event. We're going to come together, reread something probably on our off time, and then come together and talk about it with y'all, the listeners.
Mm-hmm. We might be rebranding slightly. I'm not 100% sure on that, but we will keep you guys in touch, and hopefully you guys keep listening to us. We're always open to open to adapt and evolve, and this is just something that's thrown at us early on. So we're just trying to try our best to push out of this with like the least amount of harm to everyone. That sentence made no sense. What do you get from this?
It's like Krakoa. It's ever adapting, and so are we.
Well, and we just want to keep some entertainment out there for y'all. Like, I mean, we can keep, even if comic books don't keep coming out, we can still make a podcast about comics that we love and hopefully give people something to listen to during their self-distancing.
And let's face it, all the past comics are Dawn of X comics because...
I had to pop out for just a second. I'm sorry. I'm back. But yeah, no. This is definitely a very interesting situation. We'll see what happens. We'll keep everybody posted, obviously.
And I think that's our podcast for this week.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I think I love talking about all these issues. The great ones and the good ones.
Mediocre ones.
Yeah.
Sorry, Fox.
I'm sorry. Just one last thing. If everything goes as planned, we will be discussing just Marauders and Excalibur next week, so it'll be a shorter podcast. We'll figure out to like beef up the podcast with some type of fun topic. That's about it.
Okay, thank you so much for coming to our habitat. I'm Almas. I'm at Unworthingtons on Twitter.
I'm Rodders. I'm at Rod Bunny Slay on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm Juan at Chongo ATX on everything.
I'm Fox. You can find me at AgentFit777 on Twitter.
Thank you so much for visiting our habitat, and we hope you come visit us again.
Bye.
Bye.